we had all manner of turmoil in our lives, not knowing you as Lord and Savior, never having committed our lives into your hands. The stress and the frustration and the trials, tribulations and temptations and all kinds of adversities that were a part of our life. But thank you, Lord, that you brought us to yourself and you filled us with your peace. Thank you now that we have this infilling of your wonderful peace, that regardless of what we face, we have the comfort and security of your peace. You've given us a peace that goes beyond understanding. As your word says, peace that passes all understanding. We thank you, Lord, that you've given us such a wonderful peace. Not the kind of peace that the world might give, but you've given us peace, eternal peace, the peace of God, the peace from your very throne room. Wonderful peace that you've given us. Oh, thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord, for such a joyful, such a blessed peace, the peace of God. Lord, we thank you for your wonderful peace.
This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But we ask that you hold your calls for the time being because we have with us certainly one of the most articulate spokesmen I know in America. His name is Dean Gutzer, and we're going to be talking about consensus. We're going to be talking about how the reality of the American people is molded as part of a carefully conceived plan to change the paradigm, to change our outlook, to change our attitude towards God and family and country. Dean, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you, Stan, for allowing me to share tonight.
Well, of course, why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about who you are. I know who you are, but in case there are people out there who don't know you, why don't we tell them about you?
Well, I've been covering the country for the last 7 years, explaining a process that is now the format or the structure for how government is to carry out its business in America and around the world. This is also the same structure in education, transformational outcome-based education. Same structure used in the workplace called total quality management. The Navy calls it total quality leadership. School of Work for your elected officials, and its technical philosophical term is dialectic, and so a term that you run into in a philosophy class, but hopefully just to get a good grade and then forget. But I figured since this is the process that we have to use to set policy, whether in your home or at work or in government or unfortunately even in the church today, and most Americans know something's wrong but they don't know what it is, so what I have been doing is explaining how this process works, what effect it has on everybody in that meeting where policy is being made, and the consequences to a nation that has abandoned a traditional way of solving problems or identifying problems that has moved from a didactic way of thinking or to truth and black and white to this dialectic where the world is gray, I'm okay, you're okay. You know, if it feels good, do it. And then justification, as long as everybody else is doing it, then it makes it okay way of thinking.
Well, of course, I think the tragic thing is that most people don't understand. There really are people financed by the CIA and by the great tax-exempt foundations who are working to try to determine how to change our outlook, our world vision. And, of course, they've come upon this concept of using facilitators to bring about consensus and discourage individual thought. Would that be a fair statement?
Absolutely, yes. It's well worked out. It's the CIA was caught in it. Actually had a chance to meet a facilitator who worked out of Tavistock, out of Berkeley, who was involved in the Navy being pulled in this, and he was explaining how in the room in 1969 that the Peace Corps was involved, the CIA was not, because back then the CIA had patriotic people on staff, and they had
to work on it. We're going to have to interrupt you. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Dean Gottschalk. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest for this evening is Dean Gottschalk, and he's beginning to tell you of how this mind control project works as it being applied to you and to your loved ones and to your children. Go ahead, Dean.
The process I talk about, this dialectic, is simply an understanding of language, communication skills. We hear a lot about it. You have to go through training if you're going in marketing or even in education or government. So it's the means of communication. God created the world with words. The Tower of Babel was simply communication rearranged, the confusing of a one-world language to a multicultural language. And the dialectic is simply an understanding of what's the taxonomies of language. In other words, if you take science, you'll learn taxonomy of rocks and plants and animals, simply classifying them. For the traditional person, we really think language is language. In other words, you're told 2 + 2 = 4, and so you think that way, and they call that a paradigm, a way of thinking. You think there is right and there is wrong, black and white. But the dialectic recognizes that there's a language of feelings. And so they recognize two kinds of languages. Actually, they also recognize a third kind. They move from the facts-based language of cannot, must not, thou shalt not. It's a fact, it's the truth, it's a law, built on the verb is. Remember when Clinton said it's all in how you define is. He understood that we had to move, according to the globalists, from a sovereignty, patriarchic language. In other words, you say, that is my land, those are my children. That's an is format or being verb. You know, this is my nation. And that, according to a dialectic mind, they call it theory mind or a thinking person today, that makes you maladjusted because you're not adaptable to change. Lower order thinker because you can't think outside of facts. You're always in the black and white, and you're opinionated, and you're negative, and you're divisive, and you're hateful, and you're intolerant, and you're prejudiced, all kinds of terms that you're going to be called because you insist that there is one position on 2 + 2, and that is 4, and all the rest are wrong, even if you like the other person and they say 5, because you're not based on feelings. You're based in the real world of cause and effect, consequences, responsibility, accountability. But now we also, since we're humans, we have feelings. And so the feelings language is the language of ought to be. In other words, we ought to be able to get along.
Hold that thought for just a moment. We'll be right back with Dean Gottschalk. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Dean Gottschalk. And Dean is going off around the country for the last 7 years, like a Paul Revere, trying to make people understand that there is an agenda. There are people there who intend to change the world. And they're doing it very, very rapidly. A few years ago, if somebody had said we could lose our property because we had a kangaroo, rat, or a monarch butterfly, or, we would say that's crazy. And yet, of course, this is happening. Tell that to the people up in the Klamath Basin who have been bankrupted because of the fear that the suckerfish in the lake adjacent to them was going to be damaged. And so, but you have to understand that behind everything going on is an agenda. The reason for the Klamath Basin fiasco and depriving people of their property rights is simply a vision of turning this into a World Heritage Site. It's part of this United Nations program. We have their programs, if you doubt that this is what it's all about, but of course they have to have an excuse. And that excuse is why the endangered suckerfish, I don't know if you know anything about suckerfishes, that's the one thing you want to get out of the lake, is they're no good for anything except fertilizer. Even the Indians didn't use them for anything other than, to, of course, to bury them, because they fertilize the soil. But what they're saying, oh, the endangered suckerfish. And so, you say, I don't understand this. You're not supposed to understand it. It has to do with his logic. But once we can convince people that black is white, that there is no logic, there is no truth and falsehood, why, they will eventually accept anything. They're playing games with our minds and with the minds of our children. Go ahead, Dean, because I think it's so vitally important that people understand this is not only going on, but it is being engineered intentionally by people who know exactly what they're doing.
Absolutely.
They just don't want the American people to know what they're doing.
Absolutely. And the thing is, when you come into that facilitated meeting, now the role of the facilitator is to seduce you with a need. In other words, it might be a government need, it may be a legitimate need, it might not be a legitimate need, but they have to have a crisis where everybody's feelings are involved and they're present. And then his agenda is to deceive you, and that's with ambiguous words. In other words, he's going to say, well, we're here because we care about you. Well, no, they care about society. It's a globalist mindset. The only caring about you is that you fit within the scheme of a globalist society. And you'll learn real quick if you come in with didactic language, which means that is my property, and, you know, in Klamath Falls, you know, this is my property, and these are our lakes, and we can decide what we want to do with them. Well, then the facilitator has to create mob rule in the room, and that's feelings. That was what our Framing Fathers were fearful of, was democracy. And that is because feelings then decided what was right and wrong to that state, which was the anarchy state of I feel, or in the language utilized today would be the language of ought to be or should be or might be or could be. So now in the taxonomy of the dialectic, the thesis people are the position people. They're the people who believe that farm is theirs, and they're facts-based. They will go out and count the fish, and they will go out and get the real facts of whether there's a crisis or not. But if you can get the feelings people going, the ought-to-be people, that will drown out the is-based people, or the this-is-right-and-that's-wrong thinking folks. If you've ever been in these meetings, you know you've been through this. We'll have three-minute time limits. Doesn't allow you enough time to defend a position. That's intentional, because then you'll regress to your feelings, and then you will start saying, well, I feel. You need to realize anytime you state, well, I feel this or that, that you are not developing a position. You only develop a position on what you know. So the government comes in, sets up, by the way, it's not government, it's tyranny, because government, as our constitutional republic was structured, is built on Congress shall not.
Well, of course, but people don't even necessarily recognize it as government. Let's say there's some people locally who want to convince a large group to go along with their hidden agenda. So they will have a public meeting, and they'll have a facilitator come. And he is trained to get the people to go along with his preconceived plan. And they'll usually have a blackboard up there, and they'll ask you, now, tell me what you think. Let's write it down, everything you think, as if you really had some input into the meeting. You don't have any input. It's already the conclusion is already decided. But of course, they want to give you the feeling you have some input, and then of course they'll ask for a discussion. But if you express your opinions, why eventually you'll be demonized and marginalized and attacked and vilified because you're not going along with this. You are you're a troublemaker.
Yes, and the agenda of the meeting isn't to deal with the issue you might think, which is the land and the water problems or any crisis you came in to solve. It's to deal with you because you have patriotic language. If I can change the language you use in your home or in the workplace or in government, I can change the structure of society. That's what these transformational Marxists knew. Abraham Maslow, Carl Rogers were all built on men such as the Frankfurt School and Kurt Lewin and J.L. Moreno. These were all Marxists that came from Europe in the 30s and 20s to the United States, had free reign. These are the group that McCarthy was seeing as far as the effect of them. He didn't understand this level of sophistication. So their agenda was to get feelings in the room, which would drown out the facts.
And of course, this is what they use in our classrooms a lot today. Right. Instead of a didactic right and wrong educational system with children sitting in their seats and all facing the same way, And now, of course, they've broken up the classroom. Right. And you don't work as an individual. You work as part of a group.
Right.
And many times you'll sit in a circle and everybody will express their opinions. And nobody is to excel. We don't want anybody, of course, going off by themselves. Everybody's got to work together. It's sort of groupthink.
And that's really what communism is. Communism is groupthink.
And so many of our young people have bought into this without even understanding how their perspective, their normal tendencies have been changed, and how they have been, their mind has been altered. And this is really what it's about, isn't it, Dean?
Right. And the government actually, the director of education under Bush put it this way, we must bring theory closer to practice. Now, theory is I think language, so I have to get you from feelings in the room, which means what's going to happen to me if I don't go with the group, to now start thinking. Now, the space shuttle just crashed, and the committee that was making decisions, they were going, well, we feel and think. Instead of having facts, they went to I feel and I think. Well, this is what's happening to our nation. We have for a long time decided what is right and wrong through how we feel and what we think. Well, if we go to the thinking level, if I ask you, is that your property, and you said, yes, that's my property, I think. I ask you, is 2 plus 2 4, and you say, well, yes, 2 plus 2 is 4, I think. Well, why would you say I think on a fact? But if you do, we have borderless society, we have NAFTA, we have GATT, we had a president who said it's all in how you define is. We can do anything we want to as long as we're in theory language and we're never accountable because we're being experimented on. We're experimenting on others, and the experimenter is never accountable, no matter the consequence, as long as he's doing the formula.
Well, that's so, really why they're not so worried about how we spell something, if we spell,
right.
A word a certain way. But they don't necessarily grade down students in many schools for misspelled words, because, after all, that would be as there is a right and wrong way. And, of course, it should be, if you feel it ought to be spelled that way, then maybe we should consider that as an alternative, a useful alternative, or an acceptable alternative. And the same thing is true with math. Math is very exacting, but, well, how do you feel about 2 and 2 being 5? And why do you feel that way about it? And this is what the higher math is. It's not about teaching children math, not preparing them for the real world, but preparing them for the make-believe world of 1984 that lies ahead.
It is also, the whole thing is groupthink. In other words, human relationship building. As long as the exercise is done in a group setting, and that group comes to a consensus, which means feelings. In other words, we're thinking through our feelings, and our feelings are based upon how we tolerate one another. In other words, we now have to be willing to accept whatever the group says. Black and white becomes relegated to the group, which means black and white now becomes gray. We have moved from absolutes. We've moved from a constitutional republic structure of thought. We've moved from accountability to higher authority, from patriarchic language, from accountability and responsibility to a socialist, communist, groupthink outcome. So these linguists knew that simply by changing the language we used in our classroom and the environment that we utilize that language, get everybody in groups, all things to be built in a team or a consensus experience, that simply by practicing solution of problems in that environment, they call it praxis. The name for the national test for teachers is praxis. The name for transformational Marxism is the philosophy of praxis. So we are now praxising or experiencing, learning what is truth based upon a group experience, which means truth is simply a small t. It's relative to the experience of the group at any given time. And this is the moral breakdown of society, because the conscience is not built on the language of I feel or I think.
Yeah,
it's built on patriarchy. Cannot, must but, not, thou shalt not language.
But of course it also is related to God, and if you can do away with absolutes, you do away with this concept of God as well.
That's why thou shalt not was removed from the schoolhouse wall. That had nothing to do with religious tolerance. It had to do with the removal of didactic, patriarchic language that insisted that teachers and students learn that they're accountable to higher authority, that there are absolutes, there is a cause and effect, there are consequences to our behavior. So once you remove that language from the classroom, the students get in the group for the group grade. We assume it's just to help them to get along with one another, when in reality is the restructuring of the way they think for a globalist society.
And I think that's really so right. You see, we're talking about the removal of the Ten Commandments from our schools. Now, why would they do that when if you go to the Supreme Court building, you'll actually see the beam up above where the Supreme Court justices sit. There, engraved in the marble, the replica of the Ten Commandments, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Why would they take it out of our classroom? Because they're after the minds of our children. They open the Supreme Court when the choir comes in and says, God save the United States in this august court. It's all right in the Supreme Court, but not in the schools. Why? Because we have to remove the realization there is a God. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, our guest, of course, is Dean Gotcher, and Dean's on a tour of the United States and right out in the West Coast now. And if you have an opportunity to hear him, this is a must. To understand that what is going on today is not accidental, it's part of a diabolical plan, because there really are diabolical people who want a different world, a world where there is no light and sunshine, where everything is gray under the all-controlling power of the all-powerful state. Go ahead, Dean.
Well, this whole process is developed from social psychology. People don't realize in America that back in the teens, some Marxists were kicked out of the Communist Party because they wanted to merge Freud with Marx. Freud's dialectic, in other words, he considered every child neurotic by the age of 5 because somebody had given them cannot language. And so that child had suppressed their feelings, and they weren't thinking through their feelings now. They were thinking to some is. And that's dialectic. Then these guys merged Freud, who also considered the ownership of property, which is the verb is, interfered with human relationship. And that's dialectic. So by merging Freud and Marx, they produced psychology, Marx, and sociology, psychology, Freud, and sociology, Marx. And we now have in our nation, all across our nation, in our universities, social psychology, which is built on transformational Marxism. I call it user-friendly communism, or Marxism and you know, communism with a smile. We have done what they call a paradigm shift.
Now, isn't it amazing? The American people have been told over and over and over again, there's no more communism in the world. And you say, what about communism in China? 1.25 billion people. Oh, well, they're not really communists. Well, what about North Korea? And what about South Vietnam? What about Vietnam? And what about Cuba? And, let's change the subject to something else. Who do you think is organizing the marches all across America, the peace marches? Of course, the communists are. Well, why doesn't the media tell us that? Well, of course, you have to understand that the media has always been in lockstep with this idea, because communism has nothing to do with what was in the theories of Karl Marx. It has to do with an all-powerful elite who will rule the masses. And that's really what's behind all of this, isn't it? That and the destruction of belief in God.
And they go hand in hand, because when you remove God, you remove patriarch language, you remove sovereignty, you remove accountability to higher authority. And that's what Marx and Freud were all about, how we could find man and man alone. Man is simply feeling. And we saw this manifest in the 60s. You know, if it feels good, do it. I'm okay, you're okay. If it feels good, just do it. Herbert Marcuse, a Marxist, member of the Frankfurt School, we have commercials today that are touting the immorality of the Marxist mindset. You need to realize the dialectic is a homosexual mind. So if you train the children to think dialectic, they're going to promote, not just be tolerant, but promote homosexuality, participate in it, and justify its use. Same as pedophilia, that was Kinsey. Freud understood that, and you can get Norman Brown's book, Life Against Death, understanding of the debauchery of the process, promoting this dialectic way of thinking, and also bestiality. So we as a nation have moved away from what Madison, a framer of the Constitution, said. He said, we must sustain ourselves. Sustain means you get on a rock and you exist because you stand on that rock. Sustain ourselves according to the Ten Commandments of God. But you know, Hosea, you can read it. God says, my people are destroyed because of lack of knowledge.
And we certainly be, and we'll be back here in just a moment with Dean Gotcher, and we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our special guest this evening is Dean Kotzer. And Dean is certainly like Paul Revere going across America, trying to help people understand what's really going on, because if you look at it logically, nothing makes sense. You can only understand it if it's not intended to make sense. Going to war and convincing half the American people it's a good thing to go to war, when we're not under any attack today at all. In fact, the only thing that could bring an attack on America would be for us to attack someone else. Only thing that could bring the hatred to the rest of the world on America is for us to begin killing innocent women and children, because we have a president who wants to have a war. The tragedy is people have ceased to be logical. They've ceased to be able to look and say 2 and 2 is 4. War is always wrong, and the only reason you go to war is to defend your own country, not for some make-believe reason. Go ahead, Dean, because these ideas are so important. If people don't understand black is black and white is white and 2 and 2 is 4, and there is a God and there are values and God has given us certain instructions, they can't understand anything going on today.
Nations go to war on principle. We, over the last few decades, have been going to war over interest. And that is a complete paradigm shift on purpose. Now, you notice that in this war, before this war, we had a restructuring of our nation. Our framing fathers were fearful of man. The heart is deceitful and desperately wicked. They understood that. Madison understood that we must sustain ourselves according to the law of God. There's plenty of statements like that in the framers. Thomas Jefferson was not around for the framing of the Constitution, but he was dialectic, and that's why the Supreme Court turned to him. But, you know, we went to the Homeland Defense, which bypassed the checks and balances our framing fathers gave us. We went to what's called a Politburo system, and that system means that we have all departments getting into diverse groups, which all the diversity of the departments and the people involved, all the different ways of communicating are in that room. They dialogue to a consensus, which means they have to put aside patriarch cannot language, Congress shall not language, move through the feelings of ought to be, we ought to be able to work this out together, and to the heresiarch language of we think, which means nothing is in contract, everything is now relative. And that means we have moved into a diverse group, dialoguing to a consensus over social issues in a facilitated meeting. That is the structure of the Soviet. The Soviet was designed to remove patriarch language, get people who came in thinking that way to put aside their patriarch language to work with the team. By simply doing that, they would practice setting policy in a Soviet format.
And of course, really, it was all subservience to the state, subservience to the local committee, subservience to the community, to the state committee, subservience to the government, centralized government.
Absolutely. Everything's interconnected, which means there is no sovereignty. And this goes beyond borders. There is a borderless society. Once you have that Soviet structure in format, crossing borders, that Politburo structure, interconnecting of all departments, practicing or practicing to theory, we have restructured our government. And you can come into the meeting, and you can hold a position, and you can quote, if they'll even, you know, 3 minutes is it, which means you don't have enough time to actually present a position to convince others of that position. Robert's Rules of Order, this is a key to this thing. If you have town hall meetings still, go down there and get Robert's Rules in and get an honest chairman and prepare for war, because you're going to have, you're going to be attacked. This is a war. You're going to be attacked from those who insist that you put aside the rules. We're wrangling over the rules. Let's get rid of the Constitution. They're interfering with world peace. Let's get rid of your children and you, the parents' cannots and must-nots and thou shalt nots that restrain society from a globalist mindset where we're tolerant of everything that comes down the road, where deviancy becomes the norm. And that is why we are today setting policy in government, in the workplace, and I talk to workers all over this nation. I talk to the police, that's the DARE and the COPS program, that have to sit in this cesspool of compromise. They know that if they're going to be promoted, they better play the game. And folks, there's persecution going on across America. Persecution is being harassed for holding to a position. If you come into the room today, even in church, in the church growth, and you say, but the Word of God says, or it is written, as Jesus said in the temptations, you're going to be classified as negative, divisive, hateful, intolerant. I encourage you to have an attitude and proclaim that truth. Quit and don't stop sharing it. Do it in love, but keep proclaiming the truth. Keep the cannots out there. Keep the thou shalt nots coming out of your mouth. And by the grace of God, you can make a difference in your community.
Well, I think this is really what's so vitally important, is people understand that what's going on is carefully planned. They have sessions where the facilitators are trained, or these are paid men. Their purpose is, of course, to alter your perspective, your outlook on God and family and country. They're doing a great job, and it's about time the American people understood what it's about, and nobody can put this together better than our guest, Dean Gottschalk. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and of course this is the time when we have to tell you that our special guest this evening is touring the West Coast. Dean, how can people actually get a chance to hear you?
Well, right now our schedule is, I don't really have it here before me, but if they want to get in touch with me on the internet, they can type in IAR, Dean Gottschalk at yahoo.com. Again, IAR, which is just the acronym for Institution for Authority Research, DEAN for Dean, GOTCHER for Gottschalk, GOTCHER at yahoo.com. And they can email us, or they'll miss the meetings out west, but if they want to contact us by mail, they can write me, Dean Gottschalk, Box 233, Herndon, Kansas, H-E-R-N-D-O-N, Kansas, 67739. Again, that's Box 233, Herndon, Kansas, 67739. We do have videotapes and audio tapes and a booklet, 53-page booklet I've written on this process. I call it Condensed Orange Juice. The title of the book is Dialectic and Praxis, Diaprax and the End of the Ages, because diapraxis, what we're doing, we're practicing the theory, we're practicing the communism, and we need to know the enemy so that we can make a stand and, by the grace of God, at least slow this process down, if not stop it.
Now, I think what people have to understand is that the people in charge understand what this is all about. They just don't want you to understand about. They are the elitists who want to rule the world. But of course, if you know, we have to have an enemy. For many years it was communism, and now it's the terrorists. But all you need to do is go back and study what happened during the Cold War. You will find we were constantly under one guise or another giving money to the communists. If you read the Wall Street Journal regularly as I do, you will find that to this very day, even though the Russians are in full military production for war and we're unilaterally disarming, we're giving them money for this purpose and that purpose, and we're giving them money so that they can do away with some of the missiles they have to do away with anyway because they're too old and dangerous. And yet, of course, they have plenty of money to build new nuclear submarines or mobile missiles. Why would we be doing things like that? Because, of course, nothing is as appears to be. And, of course, since the very inception of communism, we have financed the best enemy that money could buy, whether it be in Russia and now, of course, in China itself. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense unless you understand that behind everything going on today, there are spiritual forces, powerful spiritual forces. And the reason, of course, they want to take any acknowledgement of God out of America today is they don't want you to realize that there's not only a God, but there is a Satan.
Right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Dean Gottschalk. And if you'd like to give us a call, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And Dean certainly brings this out so vividly. And if you've ever been in one of these consensus or visiting meetings, or call it what you will, it's a standard approach. You know, we got to have the blackboard. We got to have your input. You've got 3 minutes to express yourself. We're all going to come up with the same conclusion. We're not going to take a vote. It's going to a change in your feeling, and everybody's going to go out dedicated to the same concepts. Go ahead, Dean.
Now, those three steps, the thesis, antithesis, synthesis steps of the dialectic, the I knows are the laws you've been given, and they're the laws in your conscience. The I feels are our rebellion, that things ought to be different than what somebody has told us. And the synthesis is simply our thinking, our justifying why we don't have to do what we've been told to do because we feel like it ought to be different. Those are the things that we find in the temptations. If I wanted to brainwash you, the only thing I could do to start you down this process to get your ought to be. My parents ought to treat me different. Our nation ought to do these things different. That's all that Satan did with Eve. He got her to share her ought to be's. You know, we're not supposed to eat a tree in the middle of the garden, nor touch it. That's her ought to be. I ought to be able to touch it. Once in the group grade, I get your child's ought to be through a journal. Or in the workplace, I get your spouse's ought to be in the dialogue. Or in consensus, I get your elected official to share their ought to be. I have found their gray zone, especially an ought to be against higher authority. Once I find that gray zone where the conscience isn't going to be participating, because they've already dialogued that out, we all have these gray zones, we all have our ought to be's, I fill up the blackboard with all these ought to be's in the room, and then we can dialogue to everybody's same feelings. We all ought to be able to move this way. I have found everybody's anarchy. There's rebellion. Their feelings in defiance to an is. Now, with man, you know, that may be okay or may not be, but with God, he is. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. So these Marxists knew that by simply getting us to always feel comfortable about expressing our ought to be's in defiance to an is, we would eventually be irritated, even if God himself would show up and say, you can't do that. God is not an ought to be God. He is an is God. This is right and that is wrong. And we must come to accept him as is. That's his only conditions. Now, if in this whole process we get over to the thinking end of it, according to this is called higher order thinking skills, then we are going to learn how to do this process on others. You've simply been converted to the process. You're now going to go out and convert. If you can't convert the person, you're trained how to neutralize or marginalize them. Other words, I call it excommunication without writ. Nobody's going to be talking to you. Everybody's afraid of dealing with you or working with you because you're too opinionated. And eventually, make sure I remove you from policy. The village isn't going to vote you into office because you have the wrong attitude. You have a patriarchic attitude. You be black as black and white as white. You won't have a didactic patriarchic president. You won't have a didactic patriarchic mayor or town council or teachers. And eventually, this is, as the Communist Chinese are working on, and we do it with parents as teachers, we're going to make sure the parents don't inculcate facts to the children, punish them, hold them accountable to higher authority. Instead, they dialogue. They ask their children, how do they feel and what do they think, instead of what they know. So we have, as a nation, been in a Soviet system for a long time. I ask people, well, you know, do you worry about us becoming a communist nation? The truth is, we are a communist nation, and nobody has fired a shot. Where is this in the garden? Satan gets Eve ought to be out. He does Rogerian psychology, which is open-ended. We can talk about anything, which is not God, is not the Constitution, is not traditional parent, is not the traditional boss. We're open-ended, which means we can talk about anything. I'm not going to tell you what's right and wrong. That's what Satan said. We can just share here. And then finally, adverse to any close philosophical view, which means we get rid of the cannot.
Well, you know, I think it's so fascinating you point out that we've been in this state for a long period of time. You know, it was back in 1962 or 63, I read a book called Foundations, Their Power and Influence. It was the story of what the great tax-exempt foundations were doing, Rockefeller, Carnegie, and Ford. And, of course, they were funding communism and socialism organizations right here in America, rewriting our encyclopedias, and they would have the section dealing with communism written by a communist, and the part dealing with socialism written by a socialist, and the part dealing with capitalism and free enterprise written by a communist. They totally changed the attitude of the people. They rewrote our textbooks. They took over our teachers' college. Now, why were these great tax-exempt foundations created by these great industrialists who are supposedly dedicated to the free enterprise system be working to destroy the very system that had given them life? And it's very simple. Because they believe in an elitist system, and that's what communism is. Stripped of all of its idealism, stripped of all of the things that sound so good about helping humanity. It was a vehicle by which you would reestablish a feudalistic system with these people at the top. And, of course, without, of course, the destruction of the belief in God. And it was only when I began to understand that many of these families, the Rockefellers, the Fords, the Carnegies, were deeply involved in the occult that so much of this became so obvious. And, and the tragedy is most people have just never understood what was really going on behind the scenes.
Right. The first facilitator is Lucifer.
Absolutely. And he was right there in the Garden of Eden, wasn't he?
Absolutely. The whole process is there. Rogerian psychology, how to get the environment, because it's called environment control. You can go to one of the 10 national training laboratories. These are Marxist training centers, federally funded. You can get on the Internet and type in national training center or laboratory, because that's where you cook people. And you can get in touch with them. You can get to know them. You can go off for college credit and come back and know how to process your community. First one started in Bethel, May 1947. The whole agenda is training people how to deal with the crisis in the room. Because the moment I remove patriarch, in other words, I don't allow one person to solve the problem, I always have to force the group to do that or manipulate the group to do that, the group then goes into state of crisis. They call it cognitive dissonance. There's destabilization in the room. The facilitator has to know how to handle that, knows how to move the crowd through the feelings language of Audubon, like Satan did with Eve, over to the thinking language. Now, when she was looking at the tree, she was now, you mentioned illusion. Well, they call it mental illusion. She was in her head now doing a mental illusion. The tree's good. It's good for food. Well, that was a lie. That was a mental illusion. It's pleasing to the eyes. Well, it may be, but again, it was going to lead to corruption. So the flesh, you'll reap corruption, and it was to make one wise. Well, what kind of wisdom was this? This is the wisdom of justifying why you don't have to do the truth.
Well, let's go to Dan, who's calling, and he wants to talk about the church growth movement and the danger of church growth. And, of course, they actually train the ministers when they're going into the church growth movement is to get rid of people in the congregation who don't want to go along with it. And they will make their lives miserable, or they'll simply let them know that they're no longer welcome in this church because they are opposing this this paradigm shift. Hi, Dan. Where are you calling from?
Spokane.
Okay. Do you have a question or comment?
Well, I just want to say I've seen this. I've seen these techniques used in churches. This church growth movement is full of this manipulation. You know, it reminds me a lot of. Remember the term newspeak?
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what the whole thing came from. But this is exactly what George Orwell was talking about.
Right.
The C.S. Lewis wrote a book, The Abolition of Man, and he talked about this. You know, through the education process, you can literally educate man out of his heart. I think he called it men without chest or something like that. But this is some serious stuff, and typically people don't understand what's going on when they run across these kind of manipulations. And so I would suggest that if you find yourself in a situation like this in a church, that you leave the church and do it quickly. And you'll find other people are also leaving. With you, of course, comes your finances. And you start a new church and let this growth movement, church growth movement, just let it fail.
You know, the people love it. They love the music because it appeals to their body, their emotions, rather than, of course, raising praise of God. And, of course, I think it was either Aristotle or Plato said, give me the music and I can control the society. And that's why they brought this demonic music into the church. And some of it is, frankly, right from the pit of hell.
That is absolutely true. But you almost have to be a linguist to understand that. That, you know, people generally don't understand this sort of thing. And, you know, how powerful language is. That when you run across it, the thing to do is to leave and take your money with you. And let this thing just fail, you know, and it will.
Okay, what is your thoughts on that, Dean?
Well, a friend of mine, you've had him on the show, Bob Klink, does an excellent job explaining Rick Warren down here in Orange County, California. If you listen up front, just, you know, first time you hear this material being presented, it sounds good. But see, it seems to be good, and that's illusionary. That's that mental illusion of the process. Once you start digging past the surface of feelings and you look at really what's going on, you're seeing, first of all, Rick Warren will talk about, well, our physical needs are being met, and then he says, well, at work, you know, your esteem needs are being met, you know, you're satisfying things. Now you need purpose. Now he has a new book, Purpose-Driven Life. What is your purpose here? Well, he goes through Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, it's pleasing, first of all, good for food. That's physiological. It's pleasing to the eyes. That's self-esteem. And then, well, purpose in life. He uses a rational, justifying process for social purpose in life. I tell ministers, oh, isn't this wonderful? We have a new Bible. It says, go ye therefore and take polls and surveys. In other words, ask people how they feel and what do they think. And then you build the church on those things. What you're going to build the church on is lust of the flesh, physiological needs, lust of the eyes, that's called self-esteem, and the pride of life, which is that arrogant, elitist mentality that has, like a plague, covered this nation. Ministers going off to Saddleback and Willow Creek. And I tell people, listen, if your staff and minister have gone off to Willow Creek or Saddleback and you want to maintain your fellowship, you had better fire that staff and that minister on the spot. They are trained on how to simply take over the church for the process.
Many of them really believe this is good, right? You know, we're going to reach a lot of people if we wouldn't have reached otherwise. We're going to become more like the world so we can bring the world into the church. But of course, once the world gets into the church, why, it's still the world. The church should be based upon the Word of God, not on a popularity contest.
And that's the key, because see, the church is the called out one. What are you called out of? If you're evaluating the world to see how you should shape the church so that you can minister to the world, excuse me, you're evaluating the world to see how you're going to shape the Word of God. You know, this is like Christ coming in through the back door, folks. Christ doesn't come in through the back door. He knocks on the front door. And he doesn't hide. He doesn't do like the occult. He doesn't do steps. He doesn't manipulate. He doesn't deceive. You open up the Word of God and you allow the Holy Spirit to guide you as he brings you under conviction as you read the Word of God unadulterated, untampered by human reasoning. This church growth process, they're not dealing with literal translation of the Word. They're gone beyond the interpretation of feelings. They're extrapolating. They're picking and choosing scriptures to manipulate you into a groupthink experience. And folks, if that was the case, we wouldn't have the prophets in the Old Testament, because God sent them out by themselves alone to get their right lives right before him and get that patriarch cannot, must not, thou shalt not language clarified so they would go into the king and preach the Word of God unadulterated. But now we get in groups. We don't make decisions without groups. And groups are always where you're going to redefine yourself for group approval. And you're going to learn the humanist language of how do you feel and what do you think.
And you certainly would never want to make anybody feel guilty in church. You'd never want to challenge anybody or tell them they were a sinner. You'd certainly never want to tell them that, of course, they're going to have to make a decision and change their lives. You want to just tell them that all you have to do is come to church and, you know, accept the Lord and everything's going to be fine, but you don't have to change. You can be the same sinner you were before. In fact, as Robert Schuller said, he'd never tell anybody they were a sinner. It would make them feel bad. And as, of course, one of our greatest evangelists said, you know, you don't have to be a Christian to get to heaven today. Well, that isn't the way I've been taught, that if you're not a Christian, why, of course, you are not going to get to heaven, unless, of course, you're perfect. If you're perfect, you don't have to worry. Anything else you want to ask, Dan?
No, other than this is a big problem, and God bless both you guys for working on it, and we'll keep praying for you.
If you haven't seen our 4-tape set on the Apostate Church, which has interviews with Robert Klink, this is must for anybody who's concerned about the things you are. It's called the Apostate Church, and we go into the whole background, how they've changed the music and the message of the church. God bless you, Dan, and thanks so much for calling.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, that's your Dan calling from up in the Spokane area where we have so many listeners this evening. Well, Bob, pardon me, Dean, this is permeating the church. It's permeating society. It permeates the politics of our government. It permeates the education. And most people don't even understand what's happening.
They sense something's wrong. They don't know what it is. Because if I can change the language in the room, you don't pick it up. Your conscience and your spirit picks it up. You cannot worship God in spirit and truth in an environment of ambiguity or manipulation. And see, the whole thing is built on how we communicate. And I really believe this. You cannot serve God, and I hope ministers listening hear this. You cannot serve God if you're concerned about how people feel or think about you. Jesus never asked anybody how they felt or thought about anything. The Bible says, go ye therefore and teach, and teach, and teach. And if nobody's listening, keep teaching. That's what the Bible says. It'll be in the last days as it was in the days of Noah. And he kept preaching, and how many got on the boat? Not very many. Well, that's where we're going. The church growth is growing because they've learned the world's language. They've learned how to cover it, the agenda, with the Word of God. Satan knows Scripture, and they'll get you in those little groups and open up an IS document if it's a translation, and I doubt if it's going to be a real literal translation. And they're going to ask you how you feel and what you think and do the very same process that Satan did to Eve in the garden, the first facilitator.
And you don't really believe what God said. You're not going to surely die. And then he gives them the promise. You know, if you eat of the fruit of the knowledge, of the tree of the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil, you can be as God, and you shall never die.
And it's interesting. It's like God. You'll be like God.
Right.
Well, you're not God. It's a mental illusion. You'll feel like you're God. And this is the pride of life. This is the knowledge that puffs up. This is the elitism. This is why when you share the truth with those who are in the process, they glass over. They cannot hear the truth. They will only hear what seems to be true, and that's really a lie.
Well, these are the problems that we face today, and of course they're growing all across America today because nobody's telling the American people the truth about the consensus process, about this grand scheme that is being enacted, that's being used through every means of communication today to numb our senses, to numb our acknowledgement of what is right and what is wrong. And of course, our founding fathers understood what was right and wrong. It was laid out by God. And he has certain rules. Thou shalt not do this. Thou shalt not do that. Why? Is he a killjoy? No, because he knows that there will be terrible, terrible consequences when you violate his laws. But of course, we wouldn't want to talk about that today. Why some of our children be offended. We might lose some people from the church. Let's just have a message that everybody will be happy with. We'll be right back here in a moment with Dean Gottschalk. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got Dan calling from, of all places, Santa Cruz. We've had Dan from Spokane. Let's talk to Dan from Santa Cruz. Hi, Dan. Do you have a question or comment?
I'm going to try to tie some things together. And I know we're talking a lot about actual consequences of these things that have emanated out of communism. Now I'd like to nail it down to some personages, and namely one, years ago, Andropov.
Andropov, right.
Andropov, who was one of the dictators over there in Russia and who was one of the chief disciples of Gramsci, Antonio Gramsci.
Right.
Now, what the form of communism that exists in the world today is known as Gramscian Leninist Marxism. And this Gramscian Leninist Marxism was perfected by Gorbachev, who was a disciple of Andropov.
Right.
And if you just take time to focus on everything that Gorbachev is doing, he's formed Gorbachev International USA, he's been behind this world religion known as United Religions. You take a look at what Gorbachev is doing and you will see the personification in action of Gramscian Leninist Marxism, which is the perfection of the communist hypothesis, the communist dialectic,
right,
as being able to be practiced. It's the furthest extent to which it can be developed in terms of a philosophy, in terms of a religion, in terms of a theory, in terms of any applications. And that's as far as they can take it. But I just wanted to put the focus on Gorbachev, look at what he's doing, and everything that emanates from him, and you'll be able to actually see in practice what is taking place as a result of all that your guest is speaking about.
And of course, isn't it interesting, we have Gorbachev and Maurice Strong and Stephen Rockefeller, one of the leading members of the Rockefeller family, working together to create a Ten Commandments, a new Ten Commandments they call the Earth Charter, that's been placed in the Ark of Hope, substituting for the Ark of the Covenant. And most people don't understand what's wrong with that. Well, everything's wrong with that. Why would capitalists and communists work together? Why? Because they're both going towards exactly the same goal. Hey, Dan, thank you so very much for calling, and I think you're absolutely right. Great. We will be back here in just a moment with our special guest this evening, as we have to wrap up this program. We've got Mike in the calling, and we'll get Mike on as soon as we get back. And then, of course, we're going to have to take a wrap up this program because we're almost to that that witching hour. And, of course, I've got to do another couple of hours of talk radio after I finish the program this evening here. Okay, Dr. Stan, back here, and let's quickly get Mike in before the time's up. Mike, did you have something you wanted to say?
Well, the communist dialectic, was that your guest or the caller that was referring to that?
Well, I think that probably both of them are referring to it.
I wonder if someone could elaborate.
Well, Mike, I wish we could, but we're really out of time.
Okay.
I'll tell you what, we'll get to that. We'll get to it as soon as we can, okay?
Okay.
God bless you. Bye-bye. Well, Dean, would you like to sort of wrap up your thoughts because we're out of time now?
Well, the Bible warns us the love of money is the root of all evil. Marx, communism is concerned about the love of money, but that money has been changed into you as a person. When the church is concerned about not offending somebody, it's concerned about the love of money. And that's what, that, you think the government's going to be awful with this? Wait until you see what the church does with it. That's my real concern. And the real concern of all is that you cannot serve God, you cannot keep your faith in this dialectic process. If you practice it, you're practicing the very behavior the world was flooded over and that God warned us will be the behavior he will judge the world, nations at the end on his judgment day.
And I believe that judgment day is coming closer and closer. God bless you, Dean. Thank you so much for being with us this evening.
Thank you, Stan.
Bye-bye. And it's been Dean Gotcher, and I hope you've enjoyed him. It's really one of my favorite guests. Well, this is the time when I have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will decide right now you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day. If you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, why, give us a call. My January newsletter deals with the possibility of a biological attack associated with our attack on the people of Iraq. So if you have any desire for a free copy of our newsletter, of course, we hope maybe some of you may even want to take the newsletter on a regular basis, but we'd be glad to send you a free copy. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We ask you to go to our website at radioliberty.com. We ask you to tell others about our website. They're all our newsletters going back to 1998, 1997, and you're welcome to pull them down and copy them and hand them out. Don't hand out the bad ones, but if they're good ones, why, go ahead and get them. And then, of course, we have all sorts of archived radio programs. And, of course, 3 hours a day we archive our programs, unless there's some technical difficulty. And then, of course, you're welcome to copy those. We invite you to listen live to 3 hours a day on our website, and then another 2 hours a day, 1 hour on the American Freedom Network, the other hour on the Genesis Network. Now, we are gradually extending our coverage across America, but it's really because people are telling people, And how often do I get a note from somebody saying, well, somebody sent me a tape, or I just heard about you through a tape. And so if you can make copies of the tapes that we send you, why, get them out, lend them to other people, or if they're in a distant area, of course, you can give them to them. We tell people never to give a tape away, but of course, if you lend it, why, the person has an obligation more or less to listen to it and then give it back to you. Some people, of course, will not listen to a tape. Others will, and they'll find something in some of our tapes anyway that they recognize indeed as truth. So we hope that many of you out there will decide right now you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. You're going to help us by telling your friends and your relatives about our programs. You're going to get them listening to our website, and of course, person by person, why the truth is gradually spreading across America. We ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers. We ask you to pray for revival, because, of course, if America doesn't return to God, I am firmly convinced that God is going to turn his back on America forever. And lastly, we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye. May the Lord be with you. Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station. My views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, well, if you're out there across America, we always welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But right now, let's go to Randy Thomason, calling from the Sacramento area. He's with the Campaign for California Families. His website, Save California. Well, I'm going to let him give you all that information. Randy, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Hey, Dr. Stan, it's great to be with you again. Hi there.
Well, tell us what's going on there. I was hearing that on the television tonight that Governor Davis says he would veto any effort to raise the car taxes. Is there any truth to that, or what's he talking about?
Yeah, you know, that's what he's saying so far, and it seems that the car tax has become something that the politicians they're getting the message more. Now, the Democrat legislators who voted to triple your and my car tax, they haven't gotten the message, but if Gray Davis wants to run for vice president one of these days, he understands that the car tax plays bad all across the nation, and so he's been pressured into that. He wanted to raise the car tax at one time, now he wants to not raise it, but the point is on all this stuff is all this money that they want to tax us on. And it's not going to work here.
Well, of course, you know, it's so interesting that the the legislators don't pay a tax on their car because they get a free car. The legislators get free meals, catered meals. The
they get $125 tax free per day.
And then in addition to what, $100,000 salary?
Yeah, $99,000.
$99,000 salary, and then they get special bonuses for being there. That's pretty good, isn't it?
It's pretty bad when you consider that we need a part-time legislature, not a full-time. We ought to have these guys live a real life, have a real job, instead of living in the ivory tower where they think that money comes off trees.
Well, of course, they've got to come up with a budget one of these days. And my understanding is at least the Republican legislators there are holding strong and they're saying, no, we're not going to increase taxes. You're going to have to cut spending. Is that really holding still?
Well, that's what they're saying so far, and that's good. I mean, we would encourage every Republican legislator to say no new taxes or fees and vote that way as well.
Well, of course, you know, here, and I was watching television tonight, and they're saying, the city's not going to have any money. We're going to have to, you know, do away with parks, and we're going to have to do away with this and that, and, oh, everybody's going to suffer from this, and we're going to have to cut back on the vital services because we're not getting money from the state.
Let me give a radical idea. The school district should ask an outside accounting company to do an independent audit of the school district's funds and look for waste. You think you're going to see that, Dr. Stan? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either.
And let me give another idea here. Now, some may call this radical, but when you look at the libraries of how much money they take, how many schools are not wired with the Internet? How many homes are not wired with the Internet? And how many books do kids really not have? You've got to wonder, when I go to libraries, I see more kids goofing off than studying, unfortunately.
You know, and Chris, a lot of these textbooks cost $50 or $60 each, you know, and they're turning out millions of them. There's no reason at all they'd cost $50 or $60 each unless somebody's getting a kickback.
Oh, dust off the older books. Give us books, textbooks that for 20 years ago, they had more substance.
Amen to that, and not anywhere near as many frank lies as the new, modern ones. Well, tell us what's happening up there as far as the moral issues are concerned.
Well, really, what's the problem is right now there's been a whole raft of bills to undermine family that have been introduced. Dr. Stan, you've heard about this already, and it is absolutely horrifying. Let me tell you a little bit about it and let your listeners know what they can do. The bills would undermine marriage, and it wouldn't undermine it. That's really too calm of a word. The bills would replace marriage with homosexual domestic partnerships receiving virtually all the rights of marriage. That's AB 205. It's a very deceptive way to reject the vote of the people entirely. We're not talking about just a dozen rights of marriage. We're talking about virtually all the rights of marriage. It's homosexual marriage that they've introduced. Another bill that would allow government fines of up to $150,000 against Boy Scout councils and private businesses and landlords, including Bible bookstores. This would be done if the Bible bookstore, the Boy Scout Council, private business, etc., refuse to hire a transsexual or a drag queen job applicant. In a essence, a drag queen could shut down a Bible bookstore financially. It's a horrible idea. The bill number is AB 196. There's yet another bill which would force state contractors to promote homosexual marriage in their company practices and pay for it with company dollars. You couldn't be a state contractor if you did not give spousal equivalent benefits to homosexual employees. Now, this means shutting out nonprofits, too, unless they had this policy.
You know, Randy, I firmly believe that God will not be marked, and I believe that one of these days he is going to just say, I've had enough of this. Every other nation throughout all history that has turned against him and against his instructions, he has brought terrible, terrible calamity to. And the great tragedy is today the silence of the churches so concerned about growth that they're really not concerned about these things. Oh, they may say that they're bad, but they're not suggesting anybody do anything because, after all, they tell us it's all in God's hands. You don't have to be involved. And I don't believe that for one minute. I believe that's Satan's lie. I believe that Christians have an obligation to be involved.
Absolutely.
And to stand against this organized evil comes right out of the pit of hell. And, of course, homosexuality is the mirror reflection of God's plan for humanity.
Yeah. If there are people who say, I cannot choose or control anything in life, that everything that happens, God wants to happen. That's rubbish. Because God says in his word, choose life and live. Choose these things. Jesus talked about choosing the narrow way, not the broad way, about all these moral choices. The Bible is replete with choices. God has given us the gift of our will to say yes or no to many things. So if you think that everything bad that happens you give God credit for, I'm sorry, I do not give God credit for children that are raped. That's the work of the devil, that God allows men and women on earth to make choices, and that's why there's sin in this world. And if you think everything is there's no choice you can make, then please don't lock your doors at night, because they won't do anything. Don't buy any locks of any type. Leave your car unlocked when you park it.
It's
irresponsible foolishness.
Well, I always like to say, if you really believe these things, don't pass the offering plate at church, and certainly never have any health insurance or retirement plan for the minister.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and let's get your telephone number out. And
Chris, let's make it clear. The Bible says if you don't work, you shouldn't eat. But I'd like to invite people to your website. To the website of Campaign for California Families.
Okay.
We have a way for you to oppose these outrageous bills with a flood of email messages and a flood of phone calls to the state capitol. Dr. Stan, we'd be privileged to have your listeners involved, and we need your help. Just go to SaveCalifornia.com to send an instant message protecting marriage and religious freedom to every single state legislator and the governor. We're just getting this going, and I'm glad to be on your show right now to invite you to SaveCalifornia.com. Please make it a visit that you make tonight.
And if you don't have a computer, you probably have a friend who has a computer, and if you don't have any friends, go down to the local library, and if you can't get down to the local library, why, give us a call, and I'll figure out some way of getting it down there. So
yeah. You
can do these things. The question is not can you, but you care.
Will you do these things? Because look, I've known 83-year-olds who got on the internet. But look, if you're in your 80s and you're afraid of the internet, find a willing teenager, maybe a grandchild, who will help you do this, and you can send basically almost 120 letters with one push of the button, upholding the right values before God and opposing the bad values. And so please do it. We put a lot of work into this at SaveCalifornia.com. It's there for you. Please do your part.
And you want to get your telephone number on?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I'd just like to say go to SaveCalifornia.com just to emphasize that, because we need your help to do the work, and you can have a voice through the mechanism we set up. An instant message you can send to every state legislator and the governor.
God bless you. Thank you so much, Randy.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
And I want to just mention to our listeners, Randy needs your help. So, if you believe in what he's doing, why, don't be afraid to get in touch with him. Right now, let's go to Brad Dacus with the Pacific Justice Institute. He's on the front lines of the legal battle opposing those people who would undermine and destroy Christianity. Brad, how's everything going? Any good news this week?
Oh, you bet. We've got some great news. A number of pro-lifers were disbanded from their having pro-life signs over a freeway overpass, and the Highway Patrol used two state vehicle codes that were clearly misapplied. Well, our affiliate attorney, Scott Kendall, did a great job representing the Sanctity of Human Life Network, where the activists involved, and the lower court disagreed with him. He took it up on appeal, and we were real pleased to announce that the appellate court agreed that these statutes were too broadly applied. They did, however, say that they couldn't do it when there's, quote, times of congestion on the freeway, which is still sort of ambiguous, but it was definitely a very clear partial victory to make sure that law enforcement CHPs cannot arbitrarily use certain codes to disband speech that they don't like.
Okay, fine. Well, I appreciate everything you're doing. Why don't we get out your telephone number and, of course, your website so people know how to get in touch with the Pacific Justice Institute.
You bet. And if there's anyone out there, pro-life demonstrators or others who have difficulties like this, I want them to feel free to contact us, because we at the Pacific Justice Institute really work hard to represent people without charge and really go to the mat for them and in the courts and put forth the time and the energy. Our toll-free number is 888-305-9129, 888 305-9129. Our webpage, which is all our exciting cases and everything listed on there, is pacificjustice.org. That's simply pacificjustice.org, pacificjustice.org, and they can sign up to get our case updates every week and without charge. We'd love to do it.
All right, fine. And then, of course, the other thing that, you know, you told us a few weeks ago that there had been a decision, and I think it had to do with planning commissions and planning commissions preventing churches from building where they wanted to. And, of course, one of the decisions that the court came to was that the people, government officials, could be held responsible for their actions, you know, individually, or the member of the planning commission or city council could actually be sued
right.
individually. Now, would that hold over to other things, for instance, depriving people of their land rights, or is that just specifically on this one instance having to do with religious liberty?
It's specifically dealing with churches and private Christian schools and religious institutions dealing with property land use issues and zoning.
All right,
it's very powerful, and we're willing to use it in every way we can to defend the churches here on the West Coast.
Well, would this perhaps be the beginning of a precedent where public officials could be sued for misuse of their power dealing with other land use issues?
If it's linked to the Religious Land Use Act, but, you know, there's nothing stopping Congress from passing more similar legislation, more broadly applied beyond just the religious institutions. So that's a definite possibility. We, would, of course, support that.
Okay, fine. Well, thank you so very much, and thank you for everything that you do, Brad.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. I really appreciate it. Thanks.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, that was, of course, Brad Dacus and the Pacific Justice Institute, and he's on the front lines of this battle as well. So, of course, our next guest is going to be one of my favorites, and that's going to be John Loeffler, who listens to our 8 to 9 program up there, and he lives up in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. And of course, we're going to solve the problems of the world, and this is a program which, of course, you can participate in if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question or comment. Our telephone number, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And you know, there's a lot of disinformation being put out now on the coming war with Iraq. There was a piece of disinformation that Joel Skousen had picked up the other day, and it dealt with the fact that the Russians were going to oppose going in. And it was frankly fraudulent, but it supposedly had been put up by somebody who had established themselves and his authority, that they had put up a number of things over a number of months and were very accurate. And then it said, well, of course, there had been an interruption in the telecast there, and certainly in Moscow, and announcing that the director of the Defense Department in Russia had said that he was going to Russia was going to oppose America's intervention. Well, there wasn't any truth to this at all. But unfortunately, they got this up on the web, Joel Skousen mentioned this, kept on top of it, and eventually came to the conclusion that it was another example of the games that they're playing with our minds. Now, you must understand that there is an organized effort to confuse the American people, to give us so much conflicting information we really don't know what to believe. And this is how they go about getting the American people into the state that the Pavlovian dogs were gotten into in the Russian laboratories many years ago, when you would condition them to respond to one type of stimulus, perhaps a bell, and then the next one would be a bong, and the next one would be a buzzer, and then you play them all together, and the poor old dog who'd been conditioned respond to any one of these individual things, all three of them together, he just went over and curled up in the corner and he couldn't think. And that's what they're doing with the minds of the American people. If you understand that there is control over the media, and of course they plant articles in the media all the time. Who plants it? Why, the CIA does. The CIA has always had their people in the media. And if you doubt that, you need to get the book called Regicide. It's got a list of 4,000 people that Robert Crowley, assistant deputy director of covert operations for the CIA, thought that he could contact, and he certainly has the updated addresses, because one of the people is my former next-door neighbor, a very prominent physician here in the Santa Cruz area, who I'd known for well over 30 years. And there, was his address. He used to live next door to me, but had his new address in there. And, of course, he was an intelligence officer. And once you're in intelligence, why, you are always more or less trapped within the intelligence system because you've been involved in compromising other Americans, always in the name, of course, of patriotism, without realizing that at the very top of this whole structure are people who have no loyalty to America but to an internationalist dream. Well, right now we have... right here on the line, it's John Loeffler. Hi, John.
Hello, good evening, good evening.
It's good to have you, and I was just talking about, of course, the games that they play with our minds, how they use the media to prepare us for things. I started watching 60 Minutes. I like to watch 60 Minutes on Sunday evening to find out what the enemy is doing, and once in a while there'll be something worthwhile. But this last Sunday, they had a heart-wrenching story about North Korea. And, of course, they were just telling about the terrible situation there, the pictures of the undernourished children and the terrible, tragic situation. Nobody's pointing out that we give massive amounts of food aid there to be given to the military so to keep the military well-fed so they don't revolt. And we give massive amounts of fuel oil so the military is warm and to keep the corrupt government in power. But, of course, as you listen to this program, you could understand why George Bush may very well target the North Koreans the next time around. After all, he said he loathed the leader of North Korea. That certainly puts you in a very poor position as far as deciding that you're going to be a friend with him. And I wonder how the leader of North Korea feels about George Bush, knowing he loathes him. Well, we've got John Loeffler here. And so, John, what are your thoughts about what's going on today? Are we going to war with North Korea after we finish off Iraq?
Well, it sort of looks like we might, but we don't know. The Iraq thing is so much up in the air, I'm not sure which way the war is going to go.
Well, of course, I think that if Saddam Hussein isn't assassinated or decides to go into exile, I don't see much alternative to going to war. Certainly, the Bush administration has committed so much to the preparation for this war. And then we find there's a wonderful report about Building America's Defenses, a think tank out of Washington, D.C., headed by William Crystal. Some of our leading Christian ministries are associated with this organization, which, of course, has Richard Pearl and Paul Wolfowitz and a number of people there who have no loyalty to America at all, but have their loyalty to a different entity. And they're, writing back in September of year 2000. And we have this. It's called Rebuilding America's Defenses, an extensive report up on the web, or you can get it from us. And they're talking about, of course, we have to have our troops in the Middle East. Doesn't even matter about Saddam Hussein. That's sort of incidental. We need to dominate that area militarily. And they're writing about this in the year 2000, or going back to Bob Woodward's book, Shadow, Five Presidents and the Legacy of Watergate, and simply writing in the early 1990s, Bob Woodward tells about, how certainly James Baker didn't want to have that war in the Middle East, and he wanted to talk Saddam Hussein into pulling out of Kuwait, and the president wouldn't allow him to do it. And finally, the president said, "You don't understand. If we get a negotiated settlement, we lose. We have to have a war. We have to have a war so we can keep our troops there." In fact, we give the exact quotation in our latest newsletter. And I would say that Herbert Walker Bush's son, George W. Bush, has exactly the same thing. We're going to have a war. Logical or not, doesn't matter what the American people want, doesn't want what the world wants, doesn't matter what the United Nations wants, we'll bribe enough people to go along with us, and we're going to have a war. And that's scary when we see that amount of power, and where is the outcry from across America, other than, of course, the communist rallies that are being staged across this country today. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, there really are communists. They're organizing these rallies. How do I know? Because I read the communist publications. They tell us they're organizing them. But, of course, they never tell the American people that, or at least the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal don't tell them.
Well, if you look real carefully, in line with what you're saying, I've been working real hard on this since November, trying to figure out sort of what the pieces are. The pieces don't match what they tell us is happening. That's probably the most profound impression that you get when you start comparing notes. Let me give you an example. We're told the president tells us we should be vigilant. Okay, so this editor of the Tombstone tabloid or whatever it is down in Tombstone, Arizona, takes him literally and notices that we have a serious border problem. So he gets more vigilant. I guess they just arrested the guy last week because he's been going out to seeing what's happened on the border, and everybody in Tombstone, Arizona now apparently goes around armed because it's so dangerous there because of the border incursions. Now, when we talk about border incursions, we're not just talking about poor Mexicans who are fleeing up here. We're talking about people from all over Latin America and other terrorist groups, et cetera, et cetera. We have people coming into our country on the border in full camo, automatic weapons, et cetera, that are running drugs up through there. And according to Dr. Joseph Douglas, the drug networks and the terror networks now have about a 90% merger between the two. Now, the problem is here we are.
We're going to have to interrupt you. We'll be back here. No, go right ahead, John. Go ahead.
Well, basically, we are not. We are trying to.
Well, there we are, and of course, our guest this evening is John Loeffler. And go ahead, John, tell the rest of the story. You're saying that there seemed to be a merger between the illegal aliens and, of course, the drug smugglers and the terrorists.
Right. Well, not only that, I mean, here we have an open border that is an absolute sieve with terrorists coming in. They can't even tell because a lot of them look like Hispanic. And bear in mind, when people come across our borders, we're not just talking about Mexican. People have come up through other parts from other parts of Latin America to cross the border. But we have terror networks, drug networks, everything. You know, you would think if Homeland Security were the top issue that we're talking about, instead of patting down little old ladies at airports, maybe we should close off the borders. What do you think?
Well, I know. Yeah, we have enough money to build a great big high fence between Afghanistan and Pakistan. Of course, we've had the rush job to get that fence built, but we just don't have enough money to build a fence along our own borders. In
right.
fact, the head of our immigration service wants, of course, to help the immigrants to get to the water areas and so that, you know, they don't die in the desert.
Well, I just talked to Kelly O'Meara from the from Insight Magazine this week. She said she went down to the border. She said the place. She said they have absolutely trashed the desert between going across the border, especially around Oregon Pipe National Monument, because they give the people water. So there are literally hundreds and hundreds of these containers strewn all over the desert now. You know, for people and whatever.
And
bottom line is if the second in non sequitur, the second it doesn't follow. Is today, remember we started out, we had 9-1-1 and the tragedy, everybody, and all we hear is Osama bin Laden. Saddam Hussein. And nobody has explained so far. Now, we'll see if whether or not Colin Powell pulls the rabbit out of the hat tomorrow. But so far, no one has explained to us the difference between the two. How will going after Saddam Hussein affect the war on terror? That link has never firmly been established. And you're right, Dr. Stan, there are people on the left who really are the Marxist crowd and whatever. There is a lot of Marxism still afoot in this country. And they're arguing against the war, but for a totally different reason, you see. They're almost right for the wrong reasons. And so what we see is a lot of squabbling going on the surface among different groups and among Christian groups now. You just don't dare raise your voice in criticism of what's going on because, well, our president is a good Christian and he wouldn't just do to me a blah, 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 blah. You know that one. Okay, it's actually a religious, politically correct. And in reality, if you really begin to analyze the pieces, you can't help avoid the impression that you're being sold down the river. That's the one impression you come away with.
Well, unfortunately, I look around for the leadership of this country, the Christian leadership, and I don't find it there. I find them all going along with the president in this incredible, incredible war, which could have dramatic implications as far as America and the loss of our freedom. And everything we're doing is antagonizing the people throughout the world. The idea of a preventive war, in other words, we're going to attack somebody because sometime in the future they might attack us, and yet, of course, does anybody in their right mind think that Saddam Hussein would really launch an attack on the United States, knowing full well that if we knew that, we would retaliate with nuclear weapons and wipe him and his country off the face of the earth? Does anybody honestly believe that? And if they believe that, and they believe that Saddam Hussein would attack us, knowing the repercussions in the future, why would we think that he wouldn't attack us if we attack him and we force his back to the wall and we're going after his jugular vein? Why wouldn't he attack us next week or the week after that if he is really that illogical? And so he really has these terrible weapons that we're talking about. Nothing really makes sense. And yet it's amazing how they've convinced the American people that truth is falsehood, falsehood is truth, and it's only going to be a very easy war, and it's not going to affect us in any way. It'll just be over there. And if there is any American blood, it'll be our soldiers, but not our families or our children. It'll be their streets that are strewn with limbs and blood, not our own streets. And I'd like to suggest, and I hope and pray that I'm wrong, but there could certainly be dramatic things here at home. I just hope that I am incorrect, but nothing that's going on today makes any logical sense.
That's the biggest thing that bothers me, Dr. Stan. In the 3 months I sat here and tried to put pieces together about this whole issue, that's the one thing that bothers me, is looking at anything that's being said right now logically does not make any sense.
Unless, of course, there's another complete agenda that the American people don't know about, and of course that's my contention, and that has been our contention for a long time, that this is part of a much bigger agenda, and of course the American people are not being told what that agenda is. But in the ultimate analysis, it will be a new world order and a new world religion. Well, of course, you recognize this music, don't you, John? John actually put this program together for me. That's why...
it's one of those wrap yourself in the flag pieces.
Right. Of course, John actually did this for us, and the timing for our new program in preparation for trying to get syndicated. We'll be right back here with John Loeffler. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we hope that many of you out there will decide right now you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us as we reach out 5 hours every day across America from one end of the nation to the other, trying to get people to understand indeed what is transpiring in this country. So if you believe that there's a problem, if you believe as I do that we're involved in a spiritual battle that's being fought on a political and ideological battlefield, we do hope that many of you will decide right now you're going to join the Radio Liberty family. And of course, it's as easy as picking up your telephone and calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV, WARP. And if you'd like, of course, to get a free copy of our latest newsletter, and our latest newsletter deals with the possibility of a biological warfare attack on America, if not now, at some later time, why, we'd be glad to send you a free copy if you simply give us a call. No obligation to you at all. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we hope many of you will want to go to our website, radioliberty.com, www.radioliberty.com. And, of course, you can pull down many of our essays there. We have what I think is the best information available today on the population control agenda and the planned murder of billions of people. And it's called the Population Control Agenda Monograph. It's all, of course, categorized. You can find the sources of information. It tells you about Elberton, Georgia, where they have the Georgia Guidestones that talk about maintaining the Earth's population at 500 billion and million in constant balance with nature. That means it's killing off over 90% of the world's population. You can pull down many of our archive programs, our live programs, 3 hours a day. There are links there to our American Freedom Network and our Genesis Network. So you can, of course, listen 5 hours a day if you want to. Won't get much accomplished, but we will welcome your going there, pulling down our programs, copying them, passing them on to others. And, of course, we ask you to think very seriously about telling others about our radio programs, telling others about our programs, because that's how we're, of course, building up our listening audience across America. So remember the telephone number. It's 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And the address of our website is www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. And, of course, we'll tell you others about that and more people listening and hearing the truth. Well, Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is John Leffler. And John, would you like to tell people how they can get onto your website and hear about your ministry?
Well, they can call for a list of programs if they call us toll-free at 1-800-829-5646, 1-800-TAX-JOHN, because we have tape subscriptions available for the show, and our website is steelonsteel.com, steelonsteel.com. And you can hear the program there 24 hours a day. We do a weekly news program, 90-minute show.
And one of the best programs on the air right at this time. Well, let's right now go to Mike calling in from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Stan. Along the lines of things not making sense, I remember in the old westerns that they used to show on TV when the bad guys came along and they wanted to rob a bank. The thing they did was they would set a fire on the other end of town and then rob the bank on, you know, the opposite end of town.
Well, everybody was busy.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody's attention was drawn elsewhere. So
I would like to use the analogy of lighting fire to the schoolhouse. And, of course, everybody's watching the schoolhouse burn and trying to save the children while they're robbing the bank.
Right, on the other end of town, yeah. So I think that, you know, we should take a clue and keep an eye on what's being done at home instead of, as well as watching what they're doing over there in the Middle East.
Are you referring to the USA Patriot Act, the Homeland Office of Homeland Security, the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act, the DARPA program, incidentally has that occult symbol that you find on the back of the dollar bill, engraved on their letterhead and on their website with the caption added, "Knowledge is power" in Latin. Why, just wonder, knowledge is power. What are they talking about? They're talking about knowledge about us gives them power over us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and along the lines of the Homeland Security, you know, they called up, or they're calling for volunteers, I think with a capital V. They'll be called Security Specialists, I believe it is. SS, Homeland SS.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, well, I think I think that there's a great deal of truth in what you say, Mike. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that, John?
Well, it's sure not going to do much. You know, the question is, why do we have to watch everything we're doing here? I'll tell you what's happening on this side of the issue. President Bush's income tax proposal is partially a move in the right direction, but nowhere near enough. And we are hitting this stage as the dollar, you're going to see some real sudden devaluations in the dollar sooner or later. The economy is going to continue to collapse. And in states like yours, you know, Governor Doofus there, is even they're in the liberal states, they actually want to raise taxes because they're all feeling the pinch. Now, of course, through a government, they never want to cut back. They want to just keep raising taxes. There is coming a point of revolt in certain areas. And so what they're doing now, like the rates of noncompliance with the income tax are climbing. And the IRS has decided to go after offshore bank accounts because this has been a very effective method of evading taxes. So what we're seeing happening is we're sort of locking down the American countryside here in the name of making them safe for terror. Now, no one has explained, here's one of these non sequiturs again, okay, no one has explained how this is going to do that and how we're going to prevent abuse. And there's always some mumbled caveat about, oh, yeah, well, we just blah, 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 do that type of thing. But you know how it works. I mean, we've seen this coming all along. The Health Insurance Privacy Protection Act does just the opposite. Basically, right now, you know, even though you're paranoid, probably doesn't mean you're not being watched.
I mean, just because you're paranoid
just
doesn't mean people aren't against you, right?
Yeah, exactly, right.
And I think that all you have to do is look and see what they're talking about, doing away with the medical privacy, doing away with your banking privacy, installing the cameras every place they possibly can, and then facial recognition technology. When you get, of course, your driver's license today now, they can take an electronic fingerprint of you. You know, there were a couple of Al-Qaeda people trying to get into the United States, at least that's what we're told, and as they tried to come in through immigration, they had to give their fingerprints and immediately they were arrested. Why were they arrested? Why? Because they found their fingerprints in a cave in Afghanistan, you know. And so basically now they're able to track everybody in the world. Of course, they've been able to do this all along.
Well, here's what you need to understand is, now people can say, well, you know, that's just paranoia or extremist talk because this is America and they wouldn't do that to you or something like that. the whole thing rides on legal definitions. For example, the current administration maintains that because you're an enemy combatant, whether you're taken on a battlefield or not, you can still be detained without trial, you know, violation of habeas corpus and all that. You realize that the whole claim there rotates around what is the definition of an enemy combatant. And once we allow the precedent to stand that a person can be stripped of constitutional rights just because they're declared to be an enemy combatant, then later on all you have to do is shift the definition. And we see that going on all the time in law, that weasel words get stuck into laws and things that shift things one way or the other that they were not intended to go originally. But for some reason, people have this resistance to understanding this is how it works. And it works this way almost inexorably, without fail, like clockwork.
Well, you know, the tragedy is I fear that they have their agent provocateurs out here in the communities trying to entrap people. In fact, it's getting to the point where you don't know who you can trust anymore and who may be a government agent and who may be a provocateur trying to encourage people to engage in acts of violence or resistance to the government. They have done this. We've seen them do it with Randy Weaver and used it to justify killing his son and his wife. And, of course, they paid him $3 million because they didn't want to get the case to go to court, but they didn't put it out. They, of course, used our tax money to pay off Randy, and then they promoted the murderers. And, of course, this is the sort of thing that's happened time and time and time again, you know, where they at the first bombing of the World Trade Center back in 1993, in February of 93. It was their agent provocateur who was there encouraging people to build a bomb. Maybe, I don't know how much encouragement they needed, but, of course, when they knew they were going to build a bomb, they actually hired Mr. Salem and let them build a bomb and blow up the building. And then they hired him back again to, talk among the various radical Islamic people there about blowing up the Harlem Tunnel and blowing up the Brooklyn Bridge and blowing up the United Nations building. And, of course, he got them, of course, to go ahead and build a bomb for him. And he was working for the FBI. Now, if you doubt that story, the first part of it anyway, I actually have the article out of the New York Times, and a friend of mine actually called the author of that. The article was written, I think, in October of 93, and we have it, and we make it available to you, about how the government knew about the building of the bomb and planning to blow up the World Trade Center in 93 and left the people there to die. And, of course, nobody was ever punished for it. But when my friend called the gentleman, I think his name was Blumenthal, who wrote the article, he said, I'm not allowed to talk about it. Not allowed to talk about it? Obviously, they do not want the American people to know the truth.
Well, I mean, and the tendency, if you notice, by the way, is to demonize the victim in this case. In other words, you mentioned Randy Weaver. I'm standing about 90 miles from where that whole thing came down. And the incident was, you know, in the case of Weaver, Weaver was pretty much minding his own business when the whole entrapment thing started. When it was all dead, three people were dead.
And
I mean, when it was all over.
And, of course, they sent a man to entrap him to get him to cut off a shotgun too short. They spent almost 3 years. A man befriended him. He thought he was his friend. Why? Because they wanted to entrap Randy Weaver to get him to infiltrate the Aryan Nations. When he wouldn't, they set out to destroy him.
So, and that's the way the game is played. Now, nobody does it. Now, even though we had an acquittal, even though he lost the suit, whatever, where are the media people who are always defending our rights and things like this? The only rights that they want to scream about are the race card, and I'm getting really sick and tired of it, to be honest with you. But the other rights, property rights, they don't care. Gun rights, they don't care. Rights to your money, they don't care. Rights to be free from intrusion, they don't care. Pretty well runs down this low. And that's just what I'm saying is we have these tendencies existing in government. They are farther worse widespread. And remember, you know, when I talk, I'm not anti-government. I'm just for accountable government. That's all we ever talk. That's what the whole principle was built.
Well, I'm in favor of a constitutional government. I'm in favor of the government that our legislators swear to uphold when they take the oath of office, and which almost none of them do. Mike, did you have anything else you wanted to say?
No, that's all, thanks.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, fine. If you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Now, if you read the USA Patriot Act, why anybody, of course, who is opposes the government or wants to change it by coercion or force is a terrorist. Well, that's the Council on Foreign Relations. That's the Bilderbergers. That's the that, of course, is the Trilateral Commission. All of these people, by the definition in the USA Patriot Act, are terrorists because they want to change our government, our form of government, by coercion. The law of the land is still the Constitution of the United States. It is, and until such time as it is either amended or repealed, it is the law of this land. Now, they do have a new constitution, and I believe that they want to use this so-called terrorist attack and this this so-called new Pearl Harbor that we experienced, use it to justify changing America forever. But, of course, we have to continue the war, as if we had peace, they would not have the justification for doing what they're doing. So we continue inflaming the Islamic terrorists throughout the world, and, of course, there is no question in my mind that they knew exactly what was going to happen. How can I say that? I read Christian Breitweiser's testimony in the before the Senate Select Committee on the 18th of September of last year. Of course, the video cameras were rolling, the reporters were there, and they blacked out almost everything she said.
Right.
Well, we have that testimony. It's available in my October newsletter. We'd be glad to send you a free copy if you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. It's the October newsletter, Kristen Breitweiser's testimony. You can still pull it down off the Internet, but we'll send it to you free of charge. Get it, copy it, send out 100 copies. And how did the FBI, within 2 hours of the attack, they had no idea it was coming, and everybody was in a state of shock. Within 2 hours of the attack, they were at the homes, at the restaurants, the places of residence, and even the training schools for all these terrorists had taken their training, the flight schools. Gee, how did they know within 2 hours, and they didn't even know who these men were? Let's go to John calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Dr. Monteith, how are you?
Good, fine. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, Dr. Monteith and your guest, I want to bring something up. There's been a recent revelation by a French journalist, and I've known about this for a long time, but this was on radio shows yesterday, that it was the Iranians that gassed the Kurdish villagers at the village of Halabja during that war. The gas was specifically an Iranian army gas, and it was absolutely proven, and the research has proven it. In other words, the Iraqis never gassed their own people. Never. That never happened. It was the Iranians.
All right. That's a very interesting thing, and I've heard that same thing. Do you have any thoughts on that at all, John?
No, because I don't have any information on it.
Well, I've read the same thing. Of course, I never believe anything I read, but this may very well be true.
Well, Doctor, yesterday on a radio show up north, they gave all the specifics. They gave the research that's been produced. It's definite. It's absolute that the Iranian army and not the Iraqis did that. Well,
apparently, it was a different type of gas. This was a, I think it was a... Well, I've forgotten, but the Iraqis were using one type of gas, and
yes,
the Iranians
sir.
Were using a different type. And this may very well be a valid point, because, of course, you can never read or believe almost anything we hear, because, of course, they're feeding us in false information all the time. And, of course, they do everything they can to demonize the Iraqis, but I believe the Iraqis probably used poison gas on the Iranians.
Well, they used it on... Well, that was a war, Doctor.
Sure.
I mean, they were fighting a war.
Right.
They were both using it on each other.
Yeah, well, neither side should have been using it, and we
true.
Never should have given the Iraqis the chemical weapons to use. And if you doubt that, we have the article out of the... recent article out of the Washington Post that talks about how we gave the chemical weapons to the Iraqis, or the book written in the mid-1990s by Seymour Hersh, Against All Enemies, that says that same thing. Any comments you'd like to make, John?
Well, basically, if we refocus back on our non sequitur, that's the important issue, because a lot of us are asking, what's going on here? By the way, have you noticed that Lori Milroy seems to have dropped off the face of the planet?
All right. And why don't you tell our listeners why that's important?
Well, it's important because for all of the years during the Clinton administration, Lori Milroy was posed as this expert on Iraq, and she kept warning how horrible Saddam Hussein was and what a danger was, and we had to go back and take him out, yada, yada, yada. Then, boom, there's 9-1-1, boom, there's Saddam Hussein, and Lori was on one or two shows, and whoop, she's nowhere to be found. And I went, whoa, wait a minute. I mean, you would think this would be the star person they would be parading all over the place. And just before, right on 911, I had a run-in with her on the phone or whatever over an issue. She called me a racist and a few other things like that. I thought, there is something radically wrong with this lady. I wonder if we're dealing with a provocateur here.
Well, it's a very interesting conjecture. Anything else you want to say, John?
Can I make one more point?
Sure you can. Go ahead.
Before the father of George Bush started the Persian Gulf War, before he invaded Iraq, there were two groups of people that Saddam Hussein had in his jail cells, the communists and the Muslim fundamentalists. And I think that's something to think about. Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much. Let's go to Herman calling, and I think he wants to ask about the shuttle. Go ahead, Herman.
Yes, good evening, gentlemen. John, I wanted to ask you about the shuttle, if you had any...
Any thoughts on the shuttle?
Well, at the moment, it looks like it was a technical breakup that started somewhere over California because this engineer shot it from San Francisco. He's used to shooting flyovers as the shuttle comes in for a landing. And apparently the debris trail actually starts in California now and moves over through Arizona and Texas or whatever, or intervening states, I guess, somewhere in there.
I don't think we can say really anything one way or the other at the present time, Herman. I wish we could, but I think there are just so many unknown factors here. But it's conjecture, but it's all conjecture. So I will be back in just a moment here. I guess we lost Herman. Anyway, of course, the other question is raised is, why are we spending all this time going into space at the present time? You know, I heard one of the people saying, this is just like the Wright brothers, you know, first learning to fly. Why, before long, we're going to have people taking trips over to the moon to see where Neil Armstrong took his first steps. And I'm saying again, why? Why bother? Is this another boondoggle simply to take our attention off what's going on Earth to keep our eyes fixed on the sky?
Are you talking about a boondoggle or a moondoggle?
Well, a little bit of both.
Well, I don't know. The whole issue is, what you need to understand is the federal government is not as are all even state governments, is not a monolith, you know. It's got different departments, and there's some fundamental rule of thumbs for all bureaucracies. You know, the first one is to give lip service to its public function. The second one is to preserve itself at all costs, even at the expense of its public function, and the third one is to defend itself from accountability. And so NASA has been struggling to stay afloat. I do know, however, Dr. Stan, I talked to the editor of UFO Magazine in Great Britain. The incidence of UFO sightings worldwide is up dramatically over the last year and so, all around the world. And, you know, confirmable type of sightings. You have to weed out some of the nonsense and the other garbage. And I always remember Malachi Martin warning me to keep my eyes on the skies. This year we were supposed to have some important announcement of embarrassment towards NASA. And I remember Graham warning me about that just 2 months ago.
We'll be back in just a moment with John Loeffler. Well, John was just saying that Malachi Martin, who is a friend of his and certainly a friend of ours as well, commented to John, keep your eyes on the sky. And of course, I believe the UFOs are demonic manifestations. I believe the demonic forces are real. They're not imaginary. And it's about time the American people understood that we're involved in a spiritual battle that's being fought on a political battlefield. And the trouble is, most Christians don't even know there's a spiritual battle going on today. We've got Mike back again calling. Hi, Mike. Another question?
Just very quickly about Lori Milroy. I get her emails every day, and I tend to agree with John that there's a problem. She seems to do a lot of work. Obviously, she does a lot of work, a lot of good information, good research. But she seems to be very much aligned with the media, the regular media.
I don't know. It's
really disappointing.
That's what sort of bothered me about her.
Yeah.
Well, we've had her on our program a number of times. She's certainly dedicated to this idea that it was Saddam Hussein who was behind the initial bombing of the World Trade Center back in 1993. She's got a lot of very convincing information, fascinating material. But, of course, why isn't that being brought out now? Why isn't the Bush administration, they really want to, discredit Saddam Hussein, why aren't they bringing out the connection between the Islamic terrorists and Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden and the attack on the Murrah building back in April of 1995? They know that there was a tie-in between Terry Nichols and the Islamic radicals over in the Philippines and his meeting with people who tied into Mohammed Osama bin Laden. In fact, for the skeptic out there, you need to get a copy of Craig of Robert's book. It's called The Medusa File and written about 1998. And there he talks about the tie-in to Mohammed Osama bin Laden, dealing with the bombing of the World Trade Center. So why, if the Islamic radicals were tied into that, you can tie them into Saddam Hussein, why didn't the administration bring that out now? There's so many unanswered questions.
Well, there's one tie-in that's missing from all this, especially Lori Milroy's information, and that's Wall Street.
That's what now?
Wall Street. Oh,
Wall Street, okay. Of course, we're never really talking about what the real issues are. And behind that, of course, there are so many other agendas, behind agendas, behind agendas. Hey, thanks very much, Mike.
You know, it's really weird, don't you? I did a show with Graham Birdsall, who's the editor of UFO Magazine, and we did this about a month ago. And he said there was going to be something that was going to happen this year that was going to embarrass NASA, that was going to be a little faux pas. And all of a sudden, as we began talking tonight, I went, I wonder what
it could be. Well, we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program.
Yeah.
Well, we've got our special guest this evening, and good personal friend John Leffler has been with us. And John, why don't you just sort of give us a minute or two of your thoughts of what people should be concerned about right now? We know that we're going to keep our eyes on the sky. We know there's an increase of demonic activity out there. I know increasingly that God certainly is displeased with his church and his people here in America. We certainly have not acted responsibly. What are your parting thoughts for us this evening?
Well, our job, what we do, and what I've done for about 35 years, is to report news. And that's what we do. Everybody's job is to sort of get to life and get to God. That's what you do. That's what life is all about. The world has gone through difficult times before. But in order to keep yourself and your faith alive and your family, you have to understand what's happening. It's important to always understand the times. There are people who can see events happening and not understand at all whatsoever what's coming down right in front of them. So the most important thing is to keep watching and understanding, because the things and steps that we can take are going to be important. I'm predicting we're going to have some real economic earthquakes. This so-called recession is just not it. In the midst of that, I'm concerned, because this Gulf War is being staged for a purpose, and terrorism is not its purpose.
You're absolutely right.
Okay, and so that means we're in for... And the third thing to remember is the whole dynamic of the UN, the U.S. government, the Western governments are all being driven by this dialectical process. Under the dialectic, they believe in constant, ongoing, unending struggle. In other words, there is nothing ever resolved. Every resolution is suddenly met with another problem, because that is how they jockey for power, money, and control. That's the driving engine of the dialectic, and we're watching that. Beyond that, one can only pray and ask God for guidance. And that's true of each of us. We're in different places. We have different needs and different circumstances. But God does answer, and he does promise to provide for us as we go.
Well, I think that the events that lie ahead are going to bring us all closer to God. And those people who don't even believe in God now, I hope maybe something that's said on these programs will tend to point them in that direction. Let me point out in my latest newsletter, which is just off the press and be sent out to our supporters in the near future. And if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter and you haven't had one before, we'd be glad to send it to you. But, you know, I said that there are five reasons, I think, for the war, in addition to all those that everybody else talks about. One is that if there is a biological war, a biological attack on America, it can be blamed on Saddam Hussein. Certainly we will blame him for the coming economic collapse of America, and we are heading into an economic collapse. A third, of course, we will use the so-called war on terrorism to justify getting the American people to give up their individual freedom. And then, of course, I believe that certainly this coming war is going to be used to extend America's power throughout the world, as we have a Pax Americana forced on the people of the world for their own good. And then, of course, I believe this all is going to be used to pursue the New World Order, the New World Religion. Would you agree or disagree with those
points?
No,
I think that's the direction we're going. Remember, the whole business of Iraq was started on the basis of the New World Order. We didn't create that term, you know, nor did President Bush Sr., but he did use it dozens upon dozens of times.
And, of course, that term was really came from a woman named Alice Bailey.
Alice Bailey.
Who was a theosophist and Luciferian. In fact, George Bush's phrase, the thousand points of light, actually came from Alice Bailey. But, of course, the average American doesn't understand that, nor the significance of the fact that George Herbert Walker Bush and George W. Bush and Prescott Bush and six or eight different members of the Bush family, of course, all come from an occult organization dedicated, of course, to far different purposes than the American people have ever been allowed to know. So, John, I want to thank you so very much for being with us this evening. It's always a pleasure.
I appreciate it. Next weeks are going to be fun.
Good night. God bless you.
God bless.
And this is the time we have to ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders, to pray for our ministers, because they should certainly be leading this very real spiritual battle in which we're engaged. And finally, we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until next, well, I guess it'll be tomorrow, we'll be back. May the Lord be with you.
It went better tonight, you know, than the last couple of times I've tried it. I'm getting that feel. I don't know if you could just sort of sense it.
Yeah.
You know, we're really just trying to see how to make this work. Because the times, there are actually four breaks in here. The listeners on, all across America, not from here.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to try to, not cover things until we go from break, beginning of it to the end. And then they're going to pick it up again. Hopefully we can do this one. It's going to be interesting and still seem to go. Honey, is it any better? Are we making a little progress?
Oh, except when you told John to go ahead and then you turn around and turn the music on. That was just fine.